And for those of us who want to know how it's done, but not by our schools, we are privileged to have the next agenda item. Can you really train your own dog? I know many people who have done this. Like I said, I'm not one of those. I'm just not that dedicated, I guess. But we do have somebody here who is. She has her own table today with her products and such. But she also trains her own dogs, has her own business, and is also a wonderful woman besides. Give it up for Julie Johnson.
Yes, you can. Right through here. Awesome. Thank you. Follow my arm. There you go.
Good morning. This is like for short. It's for short people. Can I make it taller?
Take it out.
Well, I need to use my notes.
Oh, okay.
So if I can just. Okay, I'll like lean. How's that?
That should do.
Is it going to work? Okay, awesome. Good morning, everybody. Are you guys still awake? Awesome. So I train my own dogs. And the title of the presentation, Can You Really Train Your Own Guide Dog? Yes, asterisk, with varying results. It's definitely not for everyone. And I thought long and hard about what I wanted to talk about today. I talk a lot about how to do the training. And today, I think this is a totally new thing for me, but I really want people to know why not to do it. and some of the hard pieces and the things that you need to figure out. And this is all stuff before you begin the process that you really, you've got to dig deep and think hard. If Michael's presentation was about, you know, fear and controlling that and moving forward, I think that my focus is really about brutal self-honesty. You've really got to dig deep, think hard. Is this really what I want to do? Am I willing to pay the price? Everything in life comes at a price. Whether that costs time or money or energy, you get to pay somehow. So some things to think about before you begin owner training. And I have a big long list, so I'll try to get through these without putting you to sleep. You need the support of your family, not necessarily their help, because you're going to be doing the training, but you need their support. From the people that you live with, the people that you spend the most time with, if they are like, you can't do it, that's dumb, it's dangerous, it's going to be a long, long, difficult road. You need the people that you live with and spend the most time with to respect your boundaries and not interfere with your dog. Recent example from my own life. I'm currently training Larry. He's my fifth dog, and he's only 10 months old, so he's not here today. The boy can't sit through like a dinner at McDonald's, so there's no way he's gonna be able to do a trip like this. So he's still at home. We're working on it though. We'll get there. But recently I was on a walk with Larry. And a good friend was working on his car across the street and yells, "Hey, Larry." And of course, you know, he's a 10-month-old, very, very green dog. And what does he do? "Oh, hi, I know that person." And veers down the driveway. And so, you know, I knew, and I caught on, and I addressed, you know, it with Larry, and we got home safely. It was no big deal. We were only two houses away, so it was not a big deal. But I can't have friends and family doing that. So that's a concern. You need understanding and compassion from your family and friends when things don't go well. And there will be days that you will think, this is stupid. Why did I ever think I could do this? I don't want to do it. I have been there so many times. I think with Belle and Monty, my second and third dogs, I think I quit like 6 or 8 times with each of them. I was like, you know, I can't do it. I'm done. They're just going to be a pet, whatever. I'm over it. And, you know, we take a weekend or a couple days off and then like, all right, we'll go back at it. but you get to hit that wall. You get to the tough part. And again, you need your family to be there and to hold you up. They don't necessarily need to get dogs, but they need to get you. The next kinds of things are about legal concerns. So dogs in training are obviously not guide or service dogs. They're dogs in training. So they are not covered by the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Fair Housing Act, Air Carrier, none of those. So you have to look at your state laws and see if those cover dogs in training and what sort of coverage that you get. And that varies a fair bit from state to state. But those are the laws. In Nebraska, I'm from Nebraska. And there, I can take a dog in training as the dog's trainer. I can take the dog that is in training into public places where fully trained service dogs are allowed for the purpose of training. So I have to actively be engaged in doing something with the dog. Another consideration, if you live in an apartment or a no pets rental situation, you don't have a service dog. You have a dog in training. So you need to sort that out with your landlord and figure out how that's going to work. Are they going to let you? Do you need to pay a pet deposit? Those things, again, your state laws may cover this. You need to look at that. But it's definitely a conversation that you need to have with the landlord. You need a way to get to the vet and to training locations. You know, you can do Uber Pet, I suppose, out here. We don't really have Uber where I live, so it's kind of a novelty for me. But yeah, there is Uber Pet, and there's other ways you can do that. But it's one more piece. It's another thing you have to figure out. Financial concerns. You have to pay for the dog itself, and that can vary widely. A shelter dog where I live is about $200. If you get a dog from a breeder, you can be looking at probably $1,000 to $3,000. Please do me the favor. Do not get a dog from like Craigslist or your next door neighbor's friend's hairdresser had puppies and they want you to have one. Like, just say no. Yeah, there you go. Just no. the hardest part about the dog part, this is all pre-dog stuff that I'm talking about, but when you actually are in the owner training process, the most difficult part of that is finding a suitable dog to begin with. So that is where, you know, you really need to spend time and money and energy to start out on the right foot. You'll need to pay for equipment, training expenses, veterinary expenses, and then all of the regular stuff that you guys are used to, like your routine veterinary care, food bowls, food, toys, all those kinds of things. And then you need to be able to sacrifice all that money that you just spent. You have to be willing to sacrifice all that money should the dog not work out. There's this, what is it called? The lost cost fallacy, you know, well, I've put all this money and I can't quit now. I have to keep putting money in. That's not true. If it's not working, stop. If you intend to hire a dog trainer, they're pretty expensive. So you need to sort that out and put that into, you know, your budget. Um, And here's where we get into some of the personal attributes, and you need to make a brutal, honest evaluation of your life and your needs. The dog that you want and the dog that you need may not necessarily be the same thing. This is quite common. I get a lot of phone calls from people that, oh, I want to owner train and I want to use this really specific, you know, breed because I don't, you know, whatever, the reasons vary. But, and those dogs, that breed may very well work out as a guide for some people in some situations. But, you know, I had a phone call from a lady, she's retired, new to vision loss. She doesn't have blindness skills. She just got a white cane like a couple weeks ago. And she's never had a guide dog, obviously. She's never had a pet dog. And she wants to train a Bouvier de Flanders. And that's... It might work for somebody, but I think she's going to struggle. And so the dog that you want and the dog that you need are not always the same. You need the ability to screen dogs and pass on cute ones that aren't going to work. It's it's hard when you go to look at dogs and they're like, oh my gosh, they're so cute and they're so adorable. And they're not suited. And you have to walk away and you have to keep looking. And that can feel a little bit cold-hearted, but to have that long-term success, you have to pick well. And picking well means that you don't take the first dog. A backup plan, if the dog does not work out, are you going to keep the dog, rehome the dog, back to the breeder? You know, that's something else to figure out. And finally, some personal attributes that you need. Good blindness skills. I mean, this should go without saying, but life experience and phone calls that I get would suggest that it's not as obvious. You need to have really, really solid O&M skills, because when you start training this dog, they're going to drag you off into the neighbor's yard and go to sniff the trees and all kinds of random stuff. And if you don't have good orientation skills, you're going to get lost 50 feet out the door. The ability to problem solve extremely quickly. So when your dog decides to dive into the neighbor's bushes, you've got to be able to figure out, what am I going to do about that immediately? And that changes and you have to change with it on the fly. Some dog training experience. Maybe that's some prior guide dogs. Maybe that's volunteering at a shelter. Dog walking your neighbor's dogs, you know, I don't know, but you're gonna need to have worked with dogs in some capacity. And then we circle back around to more brutal self-honesty. Please do not be part of the problem. We are all annoyed with people who bring their pet dogs in public and they pretend like it's trained and it's a guide dog or service dog. Taking a dog that's not, even if you're blind and you are training the dog to be a guide, it still needs to, even though it's learning, it still needs to be appropriately behaved and not bother other people and create more problems in the world. So be really honest with yourself, your abilities. Can I manage this dog that isn't trained to get them trained? And then finally, you need an incredibly high level of self-discipline and motivation. There's nobody getting you up in the morning and telling you it's time to train the dog. It's all you all the time. And for me, that's that's the part of owner training that I really love, because it's all me all the time, but it's also a negative. It's all me all the time. So you don't have anybody, you know, like at the guide dog schools, like they have somebody that takes out the trash and somebody that makes the lunches and somebody that drives the van. And, you know, all these people come together to support and to make it work. And when you owner train, You are all those people. You're the trainer, you're the maid, you're the cook, you're the equipment orderer person. You know, you do all the things. And it gets to be a lot of work. You need to be okay with uncertainty. There's no safety net. There's no promise of success. You know, after all this hard work and this money and everything, because dogs are living, breathing beings, you can't account for their part of the team. They also have to want to do it. And that's unpredictable. You just don't know until you get there. So, and that is, you know, my big fat list of all the things to think about before you begin owner training. And I'll be here all day today. We do have a booth in the exhibit room. And I'd be happy to talk to anyone about owner training, answer questions. My company. Sure. And Mike has a question. So my company is On the Go or On the Go Dog Gear. And I have guidance service dog products primarily. Everything, harness, handle, signs, bags, pouches, leashes of all varieties and descriptions. And the sport style guide dog harness is one that I make. And I do have a couple here. I do have pouches here. The things that I brought are pretty limited. So we will take orders. So if you see something you like, you can order it. I'll ship it. I'm willing to sell the things that I brought, but there's very little. So I wanted to tell you that. Let's see, what else about my business? So we have a Facebook page, On the Go Dog Gear. My website is also On the Go Dog Gear. You can contact me by email. On the Go Dog Gear. It's sensing a theme. Yes. So it's all easy to remember. And there's a phone number that's on the website and all that. We have cards at the table. So if you'd like that, you know, so you don't have to remember. What else? Oh, you can follow me on Facebook. I update about the training of Larry about once a week or so. Yeah, it's kind of fun. he is a fun dog. He's kind of outings with, you know, Larry the cable guy and the blue. Yeah. So outings with Larry do really feel like a blue comedy tour escapades. he's lots of fun. But yeah, and then Mike, you had a question.
Yeah. I'll try to speak real loud and hopefully it'll pick it up. You've done a great job of talking about all the preparations for owner training, and I love all the things that you've said. Take a moment and talk about the transition. That is, how do you transition to when training is done and the dog is a guide dog? How does that work for you legally and so on?
For me, okay, so legally, it's a guide dog when he can do work or perform tasks that mitigate my disability. Larry, at 10 months old, he can do that. Asterisk, in extremely limited circumstances. I would not call him a guide dog at this point. I don't, for me, and you know, because I have to live with myself, you know, back to brutal self-honesty. Even though he can do some things, I wouldn't call him a guide dog. But that is kind of a gray area. I mean, how do you decide? So for me, when I can take my dog into an unfamiliar area and we can work together to get from point A to point B and accomplish some kind of task, then I consider that dog is trained. Usually for me, that happens 18 to 22 months or so. In that kind of neighborhood. Did I cover? Yeah. Oh, and the transition. So for me, actually working the dog. So it's kind of the legal thing. Right. So for me, like safety and those kinds of things. It's very fluid. So we might, oh gosh. Okay. So there was a, recently I went to Walmart and Larry is just kind of on the cusp of being able to mind his manners around food. He does really well, like in the hardware store and those places, but we're just breaking into the food area.
What I'm thinking of is, you live somewhere, you're training Larry, you got to pay a pet deposit. How do you convince or how do you deal with, well, I don't think you do that anymore because now it's a guide dog.
Right. I have no idea. I own my own home, so yeah. I don't know, honestly.
Can I
get right. Yeah.
I think that's the ultimate answer is that when you say it, and when you know it's a guide dog, then you do that. And it's just a transition that you have to make, but it's not a magical thing. And it isn't a deterrent to training your own dog. When you know that dog is a guide dog, then you say, look, this dog is trained and I'm not paying a pet deposit anymore because it's not a pet, it's a guide dog now.
Great. Right. Yeah. It's advocacy, just like everything.
No,
I will be here all day until we're done. So please come seek me out and I will answer all your questions. And I think that Valerie and I are going to tea even after this. So you'd be welcome to come and chat more. So yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Julie. That's a lot to learn and take in. And I'm so glad other people besides me are doing it because I don't know if I'd be that disciplined. But that is why the rest of us are blessed to have great dog schools.